Hello, and you're listening to FPcast, the podcast for fruitless pursuits where we bullshit about the week in pop culture. I am Luke.
And I'm Jacinta.
And this week we're talking about... Oh man, this is a can of worms. This one.
It's a can of worms that I would quite happily put the lid back on.
Yeah. No, the genie is out of that bottle. We're going to be... What a weird show. We're going to be reviewing... No big sort of feature this week.
No. The only thing that was out was like Inferno. And I haven't seen any of the other Da Vinci Code movies. So not much point jumping in at number three. Is it number three or number four?
I think it's number three. I don't know if it's chronologically number three.
Okay.
But yeah. Did you know, like... Have you ever read that book?
No.
It's foul.
Okay.
And, you know, he's like this top code cracker dude.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that he just can't figure out, he's looking at this thing. It's like, what is it? It's backwards writing. He ends up holding it up to a mirror.
Are you serious?
It's like puzzle book at the newsagents when you're a kid kind of stuff. And yet he's just like, I can't figure it out. Oh, it's backwards.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's pretty bad.
That's why it's popular, because it made dumb people feel smart. They were like, oh, maybe I should get into code cracking.
Mm.
Yeah, I'll go into the museum and crack some codes.
And cack some dacks and crack some codes.
Pack some dacks. Oh, what a start. I seem like we're saying that all the time lately. So, I don't know. I'm excited. I think everybody's excited. It's been a really exciting week this week in the world. Everybody's been inspired to grab life by the pussy.
Yeah, absolutely. I've just been doing it every day.
Yeah, well.
Every day.
Check your privilege. So we're going to talk some news. We're going to talk about some trailers. We're going to talk about yoga hoses.
Yeah.
And we're going to recommend a really awesome documentary as well.
Chicken People.
Not that one. Are we going to wrap up with some Fuck Yeah Westworld?
Yeah, we are. Fuck Yeah Westworld.
Yeehaw. Big Hat Cowboy.
Mm.
Woohoo. All right. Play a piano. I'm just word associating now.
Yeah.
Snake Hopkins.
Prince Caspian. Ah, ooh.
Ah, lull the intern. We're getting ahead of ourselves. So let's look at the news. Should we just jump straight into the news?
Might as well.
Just dive.
What else are we doing?
Right into that news pool. We found out, we knew about Lion King live action.
With Favs.
John Favreau directing it. They're doing Aladdin as well. Why wouldn't you?
Gotta cash that sweet money.
Gotta just do as many of these while everybody's excited. Yeah. Aladdin. That's a good one.
Yeah, and, that's a good one. I like that.
Yeah, everybody loves Aladdin. Yeah. Aladdin was almost like sort of the renaissance of... I mean, it created that idea of the celebrity injecting a lot of their own personality into a character. Yeah. I feel like the genie was really the first one.
Hmm.
So they're big shoes to fill.
Yeah.
And I say that figuratively because the genie does not have feet.
No, he doesn't. He's just like a wispy little tail.
A wispy little tail. Mm. No, God, nothing. Nothing down there.
No, nothing.
Yeah, should say some wishes for himself. But Guy Ritchie...
Yeah, that was a bit of a surprise this week.
As the director.
Yeah.
Guy Ritchie of Snatch.
Mm. That Donald Trump's favourite movie.
Snatch by the Snatch. Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels.
Yes, and Man from U.N.C.L.E., a favourite from last year.
Rock and Roller.
Mm.
This Guy Ritchie.
Yeah.
Original geezer. Auteur of geezer films.
Marrier of Madonna.
Not with her anymore, is he?
No. She's traded him in for a younger model.
Who's she got now?
I don't know.
Some dude. And, so that's really exciting, I think. Aladdin's obviously going to be a right geezer.
Yeah, it's going to be Aladdin, but it's going to be set in the, you know, council flat area.
Yeah.
Of London, yeah.
Cockney Aladdin.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be called. And
it won't be like, Abu won't be a monkey, he'll be like a Staffordshire Bull Terrier.
Oh God, I hope so. And I'm hoping that, let's think about some casting then.
Okay.
I think Taron Egerton, Eggsy, is a really good option from Kingsman. Yes. For Aladdin. Yep. You know, he can definitely do that pull the chav look.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he'll have to, if they do have Aladdin, like, in a little vest or whatever, he will need to shave his nipples off because Aladdin doesn't have nipples.
Yeah, that's a big problem. I don't know if they would just CGI them out.
Yeah, maybe.
Rather than shave them off. Mm. But I guess he's probably not going to want to use a lot of CGI if he's doing Cockney Aladdin.
Yeah, and like...
Council Flat Aladdin.
Yeah, being method is just so in these days.
I think Vinnie Jones is clearly the choice for the genie for me.
Uh-huh.
Because
he can sing and everything as well.
He's a man that's just bubbling with charisma. Yeah. And you ain't never had a friend like me. It's almost there, isn't it, really? Mm. And I don't know. I think Ray Winstone as maybe the Sultan.
Okay, yeah.
I mean Sultan in a figurative kind of thing. Might own a curry shop or something like that.
Yeah.
Called the Sultan's Palace.
Yep, and they have like a secret room in the back where they do their drug deals. Yeah.
Because Ray Winston, he's a classic.
Uh-huh.
I will slay your monster. It's my favourite. Who else? You know, when I thought about this and I thought about Jafar, I thought Sacha Baron Cohen.
Yeah, okay.
And then I thought, you know, they could actually do that.
They could.
Because Ali G's fooled everybody into thinking he's a bit ethnic.
Yeah. What was he? He was in the Alice in Wonderland thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's already on the books with Disney, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm sure, like, he'd do it anyway.
He was the best thing in that film. So, yeah, could happen. I think that could actually happen. Mm. But, yeah, just tons of possibilities. Surely there's a role for Jason Statham in there somewhere. Maybe... Jasmine.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be very progressive.
That's the thing. You know, a lot of fans, they go, oh, I'm going to cast someone who's got the same hair as that person.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, when you don't have any hair, it's just really, you're a more versatile actor, I think.
Absolutely.
Because it's quite easy just to slap on a wig.
I think he could wear turquoise so well.
I think he'd look great in harem pants.
Mm-hmm.
He's got good legs from like
yeah, kicking. Well, maybe they just set it in the 80s and then everyone's wearing those kind of MC Hammer pants anyway.
That's a possibility.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I'm really looking forward to that.
It would make sense. Like, if Aladdin's wearing, like, a vest and harem pants, psh, 80s.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the movie was, like, what, early 90s, so it's not that far off anyway. Yeah,
exactly.
And it was set, like, even earlier than the early
90s. At least, like, 70s. 70 years, yeah.
1960s.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Yep. In Arabia. 1960s Arabia.
in the
night. So, yeah. So, look, sounds bloody brilliant. Look forward to that. I'm hoping that, you know, at some point we can get an Australian version of one of these things. Get George Miller up there to adapt something.
Yeah. And you just have, like, the big... Well, it wouldn't be a big lion's head coming out of the sand. It'd be like a big dingo head coming out of the salt flats.
Yeah. Oh, well, look, he doesn't have to do Aladdin. Obvious one would be Rescuers Down Under.
Oh, God, yeah.
But why not something like Lady and the Tramp with Wurtho as the tramp and Margot as the lady?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Writes itself.
Perfect.
Absolutely brilliant. Hamish and Andy is the Siamese cats that wreck the place.
Perfect.
Perfect.
I can't believe they haven't pitched doing Aristocats yet. Because people love cats, don't they? Isn't that the thing, that everybody loves cats?
Hang on, I'm not sure. Sorry, we normally research these things beforehand. Let me just get on Google for a second.
Wait, 6,000,000 cat videos?
Yeah, people still like cats.
Yeah.
Oh, they really like cats.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay,
that person loves cats too much.
Whoa. Yeah, no, cats are a thing. Yeah. Aristocat. It's hard to say, though. People don't... I don't know if that would work well with a current audience. Maybe they'd have to call it, like, fancy cats.
Oh, yeah.
Or even then, I think it's not simple enough. Because people go, fancy. I'm not seeing something fancy. Maybe they just call it...
Cats.
Yeah, that is kind of the way things operate right now, isn't it?
And then there's people going thinking that they're seeing a movie of the Andrew Lloyd Webber
That's true.
Play, and then they're disappointed, and they're like, no, this is Aristocats.
So pussies.
Pussies, yes.
Yeah. Up there with cars, storks, trolls.
Oh, God.
Angry Birds. I thought that one was a bit of a mouthful. That was almost too
descriptive. Two words.
Too descriptive.
Yeah.
Why not just birds?
Yeah.
Yeah. Solved. All right. And the only other little bit of news was we got to see Amber Heard.
Hmm.
Do you think she should be seen and not heard?
I think given the year that she's had, she should be allowed to be heard as much as she likes.
She rose out of the ocean. We sort of wondered, you know, where does she go after she breaks up with Johnny Depp?
Mm.
Under the sea.
Under the sea.
Apparently, yeah. Goes under the sea. She's playing Mira, which is like a mer person with an A on the end.
Mm.
And what an A, am I right?
Yeah.
And she's Aquaman's honey, I think.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're a thing. Aquaman and her.
Yeah, I'm not really up on my Aquaman lore. Yeah. I need to put that out there now. I'm
pretty sure they're a thing. I know there's a lot of, you know, assumptions made about that guy, but, you know, and I know, like, people sneak into SeaWorld and have sex with dolphins and stuff like that, but I think he is with Mira. And
why would you not be?
Yeah, and we saw her, and there she is. She's it's quite a, like, dull picture. Like, it's very grey. It's hard to see the details, but it's certainly an ornate, greenish kind of bodysuit thing. She's got a headpiece. She looks quite regal for, like, sort of an ocean queen. Great. You know, lots of promise. Digging deep with the DC characters. How fantastic. We're going to have to do a lot to sell me on this stuff because I tend to only see films that... and read comics that I find very relatable. And I find the ocean to be really not relatable.
Yeah, there's too many sharks.
Yeah.
Holy shit, did you see that video during the week of the guy who was, like, cage diving with a great white shark?
No.
And this fucking 4-meter shark or some shit managed to get through the bars of the cage, and this little shark cage, it was a massive shark, and the dude in the cage with the shark. And the only thing that saved him is the fact that the shark went, oh, fuck, I'm not meant to be in here, and was not interested in eating him. He was just interested in getting the fuck out of this cage.
Did he just go fetal?
I imagine so. Like, the camera's, like, from the top of the cage, and you see the sharks just thrashing around, and eventually it kind of pushes itself up out of the top of the cage and just pissing blood everywhere, and you're like, oh my god, is that the shark or is that the guy? And it managed to flip itself out, and the guy doesn't come up for about 30 seconds, and you're like, oh, that guy's dead. But he comes up eventually and they drag him out and he's all fine. But it was the most hectic video I've ever seen.
Who is responsible? Cage manufacturers.
I know. Got
a lot to answer for, yes. Hey? Yeah.
Very scary.
Somebody didn't check all their boxes.
I hope he was wearing the brown wetsuit that day. Because it was brown afterwards.
He most definitely was. He would have nerd-polled up to the surface. So, I don't know. I don't find the ocean appealing in that sense. You think it's a pretty dark, cold place.
Mm.
Even when in Batman v Superman, you know, you didn't see, like, Atlantis. He was just hanging in a wreck, wasn't he? Or he was just, like, bathing in
That, like, clam, 2 seconds that you saw
clam
him.
Clam shell or something.
Yeah,
yeah. He was stuck in a six-pack holder plastic thing.
It was, like, stuck around his bicep.
Yeah.
And that's why they're so big, they're just swollen.
Yeah, was, like, he was attached to a seagull.
Mm.
Do you ever see The Shallows?
Oh, no.
No, that stars, like, Blake Lively.
Yeah.
Top build.
Yeah. Isn't she just on a surfboard trying to get into shore and there's a shark there? Isn't that the whole movie?
Well, yeah. Shark, second build.
Yeah.
And there's a seagull.
Okay.
Of which I think is third build.
Okay, cool.
Third build.
Mm-hmm. He's only got the one bill, but he's third bill.
Yes, yeah. His bill is fourth bill.
Yeah.
Yeah. And his name's Bill.
Okay, well, that
it's
works.
Really confusing.
Yeah.
Really confusing movie.
Mm-hmm.
That's a thing you go, oh, okay, it's a girl trying to escape from a shark, like, in pretty much real time. That's simple.
Mm.
They managed to make it really confusing.
Okay.
And just because, also, the guy from the wetsuit shop is down on the beach... And he's waving a bill at her.
He's like, don't you fucking get eaten by that shark. You have to pay me for that wetsuit.
Because her check bounced.
Yeah.
And she's like, God, like, who's the real shark in this situation? You know? Yeah.
Oh, so many layers.
I know. Trailers.
Often you put them behind a car.
You do. Yeah. Trail behind.
Yeah.
Which is weird because they put them in front of the movie, don't they?
That is weird.
At the cinema. It's a trailer. That's the cart leading the horse.
It is.
It's the tail wagging the dog, essentially. We got a couple of them. By couple, I mean three. Sort of kinky couple.
So, like, it's like a special couple.
Experimental couple. Bored couple.
Don't kink shame these poor trailers.
No, I'm fine. The biggest one's got to be the final Rogue One trailer.
Yeah, which I didn't really want to watch because I was like, well, look, I'm sold on this already. I just really don't need to see anything more. But I watched it anyway because, like, how could you not?
Yeah, you know, this is their final push, except, you know, there's going to be, like, 30 TV spots. But, yeah, it's an odd one. Like, obviously, I'm very sold on this film, and it's my most anticipated for the year, but... I don't know how I feel about that trailer. It's probably my least favourite of the ones that they've brought out.
It's by far the most generic and widely appealing, I think. There's just a lot of kind of generic-y, hero-y stuff. There's a lot more Darth Vader to get in, you know, the people that know vaguely who Darth Vader is.
But even then, like, he doesn't get to say a line or anything. It's a quick shot of him walking forward sort of through some smoke or mist. Looks like it's in an interior. It looks cool. It's a good shot. And there's also a shot of what I assume is the back of his head when Mendelsohn's talking?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mendo? But yeah, well, it doesn't have... And maybe I'm only sort of nervous about this because of the fact that we knew there were reshoots because it didn't have that sort of sense of fun. And it doesn't have that sense of fun. There's no sort of... The camaraderie and the kind of banter isn't in this trailer. There's nothing sort of elating about it. It's very serious.
Which I'm not really that bothered about. Like, if they want to save most of it for the movie, then
yeah,
cool. Yeah.
We got to see Mads Mikkelsen.
I'd completely forgotten that he was in this movie.
Looks like he might be a designer of the Death Star. So yeah. That's kind of interesting. He's Jin's father, and we said that way back when that
Mad's dad.
That must be the reason for her to be going in is because her father's involved somehow. When we were talking about how he would be a good Imperial, looks like he's a reluctant Imperial, but still, yeah, it was Felicity Jones's performance that kind of threw me in that trailer. It's a bit stiff upper lip, lads. We're going to be rebels.
Tally-ho.
But then a lot of Star Wars dialogue is quite, you know, people declaring things. Yeah. And I think that the Force Awakens trailers were quite cautious about not having a lot of that dialogue in. It was visuals and music. There's no big music cue in this new trailer, which I think was an issue for me, whereas even in that initial trailer, that weird klaxon and the way that changes, I really enjoyed. So it doesn't have one of those moments. I mean, I certainly think if you isolated half of Rey's dialogue and just had her saying those things, it would seem really goofy in a trailer. And I really love that character, so who knows. But I reckon Mendo is going to kill it. He looks just great in that trailer.
Yeah, he does. I'm pretty excited for Mendo.
Enjoyed hearing him talk. But yeah, I don't know. I guess we'll find out. It just wasn't one of those things that really gave me the feels. Unlike that last Force Awakens trailer had that bit where Han Solo's like, the Jedi, it's true, all of it and stuff. And you're just like, oh, and it's all intercut with pictures of that shit.
Yeah, but it's also because it's like Han as well.
That's true. You know? Yeah. Yeah.
There's an investment there. There's no investment in Jin yet.
No, and our legacy character is Vader in this one. And I have a feeling there'll be even more than that floating around. I'd be very curious to see what surprises they have up their sleeve. And I really think there's got to be an opportunity. We must be getting at least a glimpse of R2 and C-3PO. Only for the fact that they've been in every other Star Wars movie, and I can't imagine the precedent being set without them.
Oh, well, surely they'll turn up at the end.
Yeah, getting onto the blockade runner, I think we'll have to. Though they weren't together then, were they? But I think we might get a glimpse of them as they sort of head out on that mission.
Weren't they together, though?
I can't remember. Did they sort of meet? No, I guess... No, they are together, aren't they?
Yeah, they end up in that same pod, don't they?
Yeah. But I mean, like, when... Are they hanging out right from the beginning?
Yeah.
It's a kind of popular movie that I've seen a lot of times. You'd think I would know this.
I actually don't watch A New Hope that much. Like, if I go back to them, I actually tend to watch Return of the Jedi. Return of the Jedi the most. That's my favourite one.
Great beginning.
Mm.
Doesn't make any sense, but it's really entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see I saw an action figure of Admiral Raddus. RADDUS.
How rad.
Yeah. And he's a Mon Calamari. But he's a sort of bluish colour. Supposed to be like an Akbar from a colder climate.
Oh.
Yeah.
There you go.
And he looks a bit more sort of run down and kind of like sick of this shit. Like getting too old for this shit. Yeah. So, God, these lobsters are putting us all to shame with their ambition.
Mm.
Tell you what, Admiral here, Admiral there. All of them. Raddus. Gnarliest.
Sickest.
Wickedest. So, yeah, that's all fun. We saw the Power Rangers trailer. This is for the Power Rangers movie coming out next year.
Yeah, it was billed as a teaser trailer, but I don't think I've seen a teaser trailer that's like 2.5 minutes long before.
I think most are now. I think teaser just basically ends up meaning the first.
Mm.
And I think it sort of means we're still developing this stuff and we don't have many special effects done.
Hmm.
But what did you think of this thing?
The first time I watched it, I sort of went, oh, that looks a bit shitty and goofy. And then people started reacting to it and they're like, oh, I think this... And these are like people that like movies. They're not just like random weird people on Facebook.
Yeah.
And they're going, oh, I think that actually looks really cool. I'm interested in this. And I'm like, well, am I missing something really major about this trailer? It just seemed like kind of weird teenagers with problems find thing and get abs.
Yeah, it looks ratchet to me, just in the sense that if it was its own entity, fine. But what about that says Power Rangers? Like, if you think about...
Because isn't the whole point of the older, like, they all knew martial arts and stuff already anyway?
I don't know. I just think if you enjoy Power Rangers, like, surely the things that you enjoy from Power Rangers aren't featured in that trailer?
Mm.
I mean, do you remember there was that old Power Rangers movie, that first one, and it was actually shot in Sydney, and the big Zord fights using that, the Sydney Tower as a weapon, like he rips it out of the...
Yeah, sure.
And there's like a They Might Be Giants song called Sensaround Pumpin' and stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and you're like, it was Power... Like, it wasn't a good movie, but it was Power Rangers. Yeah. So, I don't know. And then this film's made by a guy that I know from uni... he's the director of this thing, so I certainly wish him well and am very pleased for his success. Hmm. But
look, I'm keen to see it, but that it doesn't. This trailer doesn't really do anything for me. It looks goofy as shit.
It looks like the last Fantastic Four movie.
Yeah, like, I like the teaser posters came out, and I think they looked kind of good. The robot dinosaur-y things, they were very. Kind of not clear shots of them, but you could tell what they were, and I thought they looked kind of cool.
I think the trailer set this up as that's going to be a one-time third act thing, though, you know? Like, the bulk of the movie looks like it's going to be... Mm,
the fucking Breakfast Club.
Yeah. yeah, except without any charisma or... Like, there's not a good line in the trailer.
No.
It's all... Even...
It's like, I'm a teenage rebel, I'm going to cut my hair off. Oh, yeah, I'm a teenage rebel, I have a fucking restraining anklet thingy.
Yeah. Like the worst YA teenager bullshit where there's just no personality or character attached from the moment where you see the graffiti on the locker, die, ugly loser.
No one cares about you.
Like, people that age shouldn't be saying stuff like, die, ugly loser. Mm. You know, that sounds like a fucking 3-year-old. real scathing. Like, you would... Seriously, if you saw that, you would think, well, I am dealing with an absolute mental midget here. Like, this isn't somebody... Like, life is going to deal with that person.
Yes.
You know, that person is already having the shit beaten out of them by their trailer trash parents.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to worry about this person. Mm. Like, that person...
I just have to put up with them for maybe a couple more years and then... Yeah.
I might suggest they read a book or something. Mm-hmm. Because this isn't a smart...
Or watch something other than the Kardashians.
Yeah, this isn't a smart person. So that's kind of the vibe I get from that trailer. These aren't smart kids or interesting kids or relatable kids or... There's no humor or warmth or character or anything in this 2-minute teaser. So, but you know, they chose the 2 minutes to show us. So, fuck them. In better news, though, Greg Sestero.
Sestosterone.
Of the Room fame, who wrote the Disaster Artist book, who has been on this very podcast. We had a chat with him. He's made a film with Tommy Wiseau, which they sort of did this on the sly. It's called Best F parentheses R Eens. Best Friends, or is
Best
that
Fiends?
Fiends. Mm. Yeah. Wow.
Wow.
Already you talked about
how
layers
tricksy.
Before.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like Sestero's family have been killed by ninjas.
Yeah, and he needs some money for karate lessons.
So he needs karate lessons.
Yeah.
You can see the production values here as well, because his sign says needs dollar sign
for number four
karate lessons. Yeah. So needs $4 karate lessons.
Yeah.
Confusing.
Hey, if I could find $4 karate lessons, I'd probably take them too.
Look, they probably took his wallet. He probably found $4 down the side of the car seat, something like that. You take what you can get. Mm. But what he does get instead is Tommy Wiseau in a hearse pulls up and basically says, "Get in, you can trust me, guy."
Yeah.
Then just craziness ensues. Like, Tommy Wiseau's got a sort of Frankenstein lab with a body
that he's made,
like a something? Fake Sestero, Fostero thing there. Intrigue, blood, gold diggers. It looks pretty amazing.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Directed by Gary Fong and giving Wiseau a run for his money in terms of the production values, I think.
Because we Googled Gary Fong, and the only Gary Fong we could come up with was Gary Fong that I was already familiar with, because he made, probably about 10, 15 years ago, made this photography accessory which you put on top of your flash and it diffuses the light.
Yeah.
If that's the same guy, then I guess good on him for having a crack, but well, Jesus.
It does say he's a filmmaker. I don't think it's, like, probably his fault. I think it's probably them going, "Hey, Gary Fong, he knows about cameras and stuff. We should get him to do it."
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I mean, like, he's the best guy. He's got YouTube tutorials and everything, so... Mm. Do you reckon that if people go back to that episode where we talked to Rex Sestero, I put forward this idea about Tommy Wiseau, he of mysterious origins, being some sort of Frankenstein creation. Mm-hmm. Do you think perhaps, we didn't see it at the time, but maybe a little cartoon light bulb just went off above Sestero's head?
Maybe.
And
maybe that's why his hair was just so golden. There was the light in his hair just going off.
And perhaps we'll get, like, a producer credit on this thing.
Well, actually, probably not, because you called him Mark about 4 times during that interview.
Well, that's because he's such a good actor. But it's very...
So, you know, I think you shot both of us in the foot with that
very
one.
Difficult to...
Separate him from...
Yeah, very mellow guy, wasn't he?
He was very quiet, very serene. Very serene person.
Yeah, very generous with his time and very laid back.
So laid back that he actually didn't turn up to the interview the first time.
That's true. Yeah, took a couple of days to get that happening, and just sort of like willing to sort of go along with things, which I think is how he got involved in the whole Room thing in the first place. Because I'd said to him in sort of not on recording, saying, "Oh, I really love this part of the book. I thought that was really great." And he was like, "Oh yeah, should I read that part out instead of the part that I was going to read out at the Q&A today?" And was sort of like suddenly into that. And I was like, "Well, no, like, do what you want to do, man." But it was a good part. But yeah.
Mm.
So could be easily led, I think.
Yeah. He seems like just a nice, sweet boy who fell in with Tommy Wiseau.
And I don't know if there's a release date for that, but definitely we will be reporting on that as soon as it hits.
For sure.
But let's talk about movies that we did see. I feel like I'm not really on the ball today. I'm not on the ball this week, to be honest.
We're out of routine.
Yeah, I'm kind of... That's true. We didn't have the warm-up today, so we normally come straight off the bat from going to the cinema.
Mm.
But also, yeah, I just haven't been able to, like, get into my drawing or anything this week. I'm just not mentally there.
It's been a bit of an week as far as just news and movies and everything. It's hard to do a weekly podcast when there's not really much to talk about.
Well, not a lot that actually sort of inspires you and kind of gets you going. Yeah, I think maybe that's this sort of thing at the moment is we've hit this part of the year where I don't feel like there's anything that I'm really looking forward to. There's, you know, Doctor Strange is in a couple of weeks. That's cool and everything, and I'll be looking forward to that at the time. But I mean, like, really looking forward to, you know, things to just sort of really engage me. Anyway, should we talk about which one first?
Let's start at the bottom and work to the top.
Okay, Yoga Hosers. Now, I've already said too much about this film.
Yes, you have. Directly to Kevin Smith.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell that story first?
Give us... Look, I'm going to come clean about this, but do you want to give us just a sort of feeling about Yoga Hosers, what it is?
Okay, so Yoga Hosers is a spin-off from Kevin Smith's movie Tusk, which came out... Was that last year?
Something like that.
Yeah. And it features the two girls that work in the convenience store thing. It's a movie all about them, and also features Johnny Depp's character from Tusk as well, which is surely a movie that absolutely no one fucking asked for.
Yeah.
Really. And then, yeah, from the trailer, it just looks like the convenience store gets taken over by, like, Nazi sausages, but that's such a small part of the movie that it's just, like, they just do stuff in a convenience store, basically. That's the movie.
And it has lots of cameos by... Not even, like, people that... No one of note from Kevin Smith's films. Yeah. But, you know, of course, Jason Mewes shows up. Haley Joel Osment's in there. Justin Long again. But all the, like, people that were really good, like... Michael Parks, is that who was in Tusk? Who was the guy that turned him into a walrus? Like that's in it. And Kevin Smith's wife's in it.
Chance of getting... buddy Ben Affleck back for a cameo in a Kevin Smith movie, is there?
No. And also...
What's her face from Orange is the New Black's in it?
Oh, Natasha Lyonne, yeah. And Ralph Garman, who's his co-host on Hollywood Babylon, is sort of the Nazi villain. Yeah, it's a really awful film. It's not a crime to make an awful film, but yeah, this is a guy who worked with Ben Affleck and Bruce Willis and Seth Rogen and Alan Rickman and Matt Damon, and who really did some wonderful, thoughtful, and really funny things. Even when he, you know, wasn't a particularly great filmmaker, he was certainly a really interesting writer and a bit of a sort of visionary that sort of, you know, arose in those early 90s. And you've got that thing where all of his contemporaries have become so much better and keep getting better and better and have really sort of grown as filmmakers. And you know, like, I would have lumped all sorts of things like Dazed and Confused and Clerks and everything together, right? And certainly in that mindset in the 90s when I was watching things like that. But you know, you look at what Linklater's made or what Tarantino's made, and Smith... For me, like, Tusk is a pretty dumb film, but it does actually have a surprising bit of craft to it, and it has some sequences which are kind of nicely put together. It's not particularly well written, but it has its moments, whereas this is probably the biggest regression I've ever seen from a filmmaker. Like, it's sort of subpar YouTube stuff. It's really unfunny. It's really lazy.
It genuinely feels like it's something that they made up as they went along. Like, they just went, how about we do this today? And there's so much singing. why the fuck is there so much singing in this movie?
He's really indulged everyone. I am going to say some spoilery things because I don't think it's possible to spoil this thing. But like Ralph Garman, for example, who's I found quite hard to take when I've listened to Hollywood Handbook. Hollywood Handbook, that's a different thing. Hollywood Babylon. Is that he's quite arrogant. He lays into a lot of stuff. I find him quite aggressive. Like, he feels to me to have this kind of chip on his shoulder about stuff. Like, when Anne Hathaway had those paparazzi shots without the underwear, he sort of mocked that and put it up in those pictures up in front of a live audience as kind of, haha, she doesn't want these seen. Well, let's have a look at them anyway, kind of thing. Just there's a sort of weird bitterness there for me. He's a big fan of Adam West, and he does, like, he does impressions on the show, but half-assed in the sense that, there's about four of them that he does.
Yeah.
Like, I remember them talking about Alan Tudyk's doing his Ed Gwynn impression as King Candy or whatever his name is in Wreck-It Ralph, and Ralph Gorman was like, why didn't I get to do that? I would love to have done that. And then for no reason at all, in Yoga Hoses, when he's revealed as the villain, he does all those impressions that he does on the podcast.
Yeah, because they're basically saying, oh, well, you know, maybe you don't understand my German accent. Oh, I'm going to pretend to be Stallone.
He does Stallone, Schwarzenegger, Ed Gwynn, and Adam West.
Yeah.
And it's so lazy and indulgent, and it's just horrible.
It makes absolutely no sense.
And it doesn't paint him in a good light. It doesn't show him as, like, an actor. It's just really awful. And I understand, okay, it's a friends and family thing. We're doing it for the fans, etc. But I just can't help thinking that all those people still had to show up. Like, they still spent the same time, if it was a more thought-out script or not. You know, and all he had to do was spend that little bit of extra time and actually make it something. Like, you would think he would have something that he could take those two girls and have something that was kind of Clerks.
Yeah, because there were little tiny fleeting moments where I was like, oh, I kind of like that idea. But then he would just take a fucking U-turn and go in some other direction, which was boring.
He could have even played on that sort of idea of, and I don't mean explicitly within the film, but just philosophically, of that idea of the all-female reboot kind of thing. Like, I want to do something, because obviously he wants to do something for those two girls.
Yeah.
And I thought they were likable. They were fine. And we've seen, I'm pretty sure Johnny Depp's daughter's in... Didn't we see her in a trailer with Natalie Portman not that long ago? Not Camilla, but something else.
Yeah, not sure. I quite liked her. I thought she had.
So nice, I think she's going to go on and do legitimate things. She's going to be an actual actress. But it's just a fucking horrible, lazy, unfunny mess. And just a real disappointment. And I think he really let down the people that are in it, because there are people that are quite good that I've seen do good things, like Natasha Lyonne and Justin Long and even Haley Joel Osment, who has done some great comedy stuff recently, who are so unsupported and exposed through just shitty writing and shitty filming and everything.
And, like, I get that...
Where they just look dumb.
Yeah, and, like, I know that half of the joke is that everyone's doing bad Canadian accents, but, like, there was a point where I was like, are these characters... Is this character meant to be Irish, or are they just doing a really, really bad Canadian accent? It's not funny at that point.
No, and his stereotypes, like, amuse him.
It's like, beavers. Oh, yeah. God.
And they say a boot 1,000 times. Yeah. So it's it makes
him boot that.
Giggle. Yeah, it's just fucking horrible. All right, the elephant in the room. Let's talk about my bad behavior. So I watched the film and I was quite drunk, and I decided to start tweeting my response to it to Kevin Smith. And,
like, directly at Kevin Smith.
Yeah. And not, like, abusing him or anything, nothing personal, but basically saying things like that it makes the works of Adam Sandler and Kevin James. And I stand by these opinions. The bad behavior is actually putting them directly to Kevin Smith. Because I think that, you know, he used to be that sort of enfant terrible, you know, someone who was like outside that mainstream and really sort of pushing things and had unique things to say. And I think he's actually got to the point where, you know, his movie shouldn't be worse than the Ridiculous Six. You know, he should be striving beyond that. And I also said that he had some really great people in this, but he's getting them to do embarrassing shit, and that he has a responsibility. And yeah, just a lot of like snarky comments about the film. And I said those things to him. Now, at the time, I'm thinking, like, in my head at the time, I feel like he sort of feels like he's in on the joke. Like, he's sort of pushing this is one of the worst movies ever made, which I don't think is an excuse for making a boring, messy movie. But I regret doing it just for the fact that it's really anti the kind of behavior that we support on this show. We're always talking about not being that person that blows up about a movie or, you know, goes in about how terrible a movie is, not being a shithead to people on the internet, that sort of stuff. So I really did the opposite of the kinds of things that we tend to say on the show and support on the show. And it's an interesting insight as well, because you can see, and it's what's gross about it, is you actually do feel kind of empowered when the celebrity responds. And what happened was Kevin Smith, he didn't, and to his credit, he just liked a couple of them and retweeted them, because I think it fits his narrative of, yeah, this is just a terrible film I've made. I think that's the way he's going to go, in the same way like Wiseau does with The Room. We do, you get a kick out of that sort of idea of, oh, you know, something I've said has, the celebrity has seen it and it's become part of their day. And that's when you realize, like, shit, like, there's so much gross stuff that people say to celebrities, and
it's like, oh, I just contributed a negative thing to that person's day,
and that's what they get out of it. That sort of feeling of, oh, I became, you know, a part of this when they weren't a part of this. And when you think about the way people have reacted about Ghostbusters and all that sort of shit, and when they've baited celebrities, you think, God, half the time they probably don't even mean at all what they're saying. They're just trying to get that that little bit of validation, like, hey, look at me, you saw me, kind of thing. So, yeah, it's pretty gross. So I don't take back what I said, because I feel like those things are true. But and I do think Smith, of all people, who has been battled it out in, he's had some classic, like, go into the talkbacks and just battle it out with people. And I would have loved it if he'd like responded at the time and we could have had a battle, because then I would have gotten his tone. But
no, maybe it would have been more fun if you'd done it under your own account and maybe not the Fruitless Pursuits one. Well, there you go. That was the other thing as well.
So I certainly don't speak for everyone on Fruitless Pursuits there. I didn't really use my account. I think of, like, but the thing is, there's no precedent either. I mean, the Fruitless Pursuits account is mainly just saying when there's a show.
Yeah. So now it's saying when there's a show and abusing Kevin Smith.
You know, these things happen, and I think the fact that I can kind of reflect on that and talk about it and own up to it is interesting. I think that's
interesting. It's just, you know, the right thing to do.
Well, I think it's just, it's part of our story. Like, it's one of those things that, I don't know, like, I am sort of passionate about that stuff. It's different, because we talk about that, about not every film needs to change your life, and if you don't like something, just, you know, move on or whatever. But I always feel with him more than anybody else, more than, like, fucking George Lucas or anything like that. And that's an interesting thing, because when people do the endless complaining about George Lucas, I've always thought, well, you know, he created all this stuff. Let him do, you know, what he wants to do. But I feel like there was always something in those films. Like, story and dialogue and everything and dealing with actors has never been a thing. But you've really lost sight of something if you don't see those prequels as at least being innovative and sort of groundbreaking. There's
imagination in that world building and stuff.
And there's all these techniques, all these things that were done for the first time, like just in Phantom Menace, that everybody learnt from and then takes on, that wouldn't have existed otherwise. So there's this sort of craft and this kind of paying back all the time with him. Whereas Kevin Smith just absolutely fucking blew me away when like I saw Clerks for the first time. Just fell in love with it. It just became my favorite movie. And it was so inspiring. And I went to film school and I was writing and I was doing all these things. And I just thought, you know, here's this guy that is just... Like, there was a real sincerity to his stuff and what he was saying and how he was talking about things that I just had not seen in anything else. I just thought it was brilliant. And all of that has just gone. Like, now there's no sincerity or truth to anything he writes. Like, there's just no sort of intrinsic value to it for me. And I feel like I'm watching these things. Like, I was excited to see Yoga Hose. It's out of pure morbid curiosity. It was that sort of train wreck thing. And, but it's not even entertaining in a bad way, like a sort of cult film.
Yeah, I literally spent like 90% of that movie on my phone. I was just listening to it for most of it because it was just so uninteresting that refreshing my Twitter feed was more interesting than watching Yoga Hoses. Yeah.
And that's what I was going through, except when I was instead of refreshing it, I was adding...
Tweeting
and stuff. But yeah, I just want someone to shake him and just go like, fucking, he should be the smartest guy in the room. He used to be the smartest guy in the room.
No, maybe he's just not anymore and we just kind of have to accept it.
Because I don't dislike him at all. Like, when I see him as a host or stuff like that, I have the feeling, like, if we were to meet Kevin Smith, even after, like, doing something like, you know, telling him how shitty his movie was on Twitter, I bet you he would be one charismatic, like, generous... welcoming guy, and I bet he would be like an absolute blast to hang around with. But yeah, this movie fucking sucks. I don't say that often. I'm usually trying to find the positive. Positive was that the girls have charisma and it wasn't their fault, but they were let down in my opinion. I think we said enough about Yoga Hoses. I would avoid it like the plague is my recommendation.
I think wasn't there one bit where there's like Johnny Depp's character and he's talking to like, you know, his daughter, basically. And it almost feels like he's kind of hitting on her a bit. That bothered me. When they're in the library or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, fuck. This is just really awful.
I tweeted about that. Did I not? I don't actually remember what I said.
No, it's always a good sign.
I know. I have a problem. Yeah, no, there was something there.
Doesn't Johnny Depp go, oh, hey, Kevin Smith, maybe I shouldn't say this to my actual daughter? Like, maybe that's a kind of a bad idea and I shouldn't do it.
Well, he especially mustn't be enjoying it at the moment with just all the negative attention. No, I'm mixing it up. My tweet is the best part of Yoga Hoses is Kevin Smith thrusting his crotch at his daughter.
Oh, okay.
So he does that a bit as well.
Yeah. But, like, it's a little CGI version. He's not actually there.
They're a close family.
Yeah.
Anyway. Let's talk about something that... I don't think you loved it as much as I... I love this film. I'm only saying that by your Letterboxd rating.
I thought it was fine.
I think it's, like...
I thought it was an interesting journey, but as a perhaps as a documentary, it had a weak ending. But it was a very interesting concept and an interesting journey to go on.
Talking about a documentary called Tickled. And it's by far my favourite documentary I've seen this year. And I love this film so much that I reckon it might even make my top 10.
Okay.
I really dug this film. And it's because of the journey it took me on. And this is a hard one to talk about because you don't want to spoil anything about it. So this is a recommendation more than anything. But it's called Tickled. It is by a New Zealand pair of New Zealand filmmakers. Dave Farrier is the star who does pop culture segments in New Zealand, light entertainment reporter, and he finds out about competitive endurance tickling through some videos that were sent on YouTube.
Yeah, and that's pretty light entertainment, you know? That's something, a little sound bite to give the morning news crew.
It looks funny, odd. It's young athletes. It looks quite homoerotic. They are being offered by this woman called Jane O'Brien. Jane O'Brien, something like that. They'll pay them a few $1,000, fly them to LA, and they can participate in this strange new sport. And he thinks, well, this is just an interesting sort of story to do. And if you just glance at this documentary, you might think, oh, that's all this is. But when they make contact, something very odd happens. And it gets odder and odder and odder. And they begin to realize... there is so much more to this story than we thought there was.
Yeah, it gets very deep and dark and very strange very, very quickly. And Yeah, it's a very, very engrossing journey.
It's got a clear villain in a way, which some of my favourite documentaries have, like, you know, King of Kong with Billy Mitchell as the villain. This one's far more sinister than Billy Mitchell. Yeah, it almost becomes this sort of unravelling of a sort of supervillain as they become embroiled in something that is so much bigger
than they ever expected.
And yeah. It becomes this globe-trotting investigative, just... I loved it. Not only do I think the story is just absolutely fascinating, if you watch it and you enjoy it, there's some great follow-up stuff you can watch. This story did continue. I watched a 45-minute video that was shot at one of their screenings where something crazy happened. I almost found that as engrossing as the documentary itself. Mm. Also, you know, we've watched horror movies and thrillers and all sorts of stuff, and you think about that transportive aspect of cinema and what gives you that response. And I've thought, even though I've seen some horror films that I think are really interesting, like The Witch and stuff, nothing's really had me on edge. But that moment when those guys were going to confront for the first time, I was on edge more than I'd been in any movie. I was feeling like I was going to, I was in their situation with them.
You feel like a part of the team.
Yeah.
When they're going, because you don't know what's going to happen. But the thing is, they don't know what's going to happen. Yeah. So you're literally in real time, first person, going through this stuff with them.
So I was so there, and it was making me feel these emotions and sort of engagement that a lot of other stuff, particularly fiction, had not made me feel this year. So just on that basis alone, I've got to give it, like, full credit. So, yeah, it's called Tickled. If you're able to see it, just trust it. And go along and don't look too deeply into it beforehand. But that's my big recommendation.
Yeah, and if you do find that it crops up near you in cinemas, I think it has done some of the film festival stuff like that. There were some really small screenings here, but people had to... It was like you had to pre-buy tickets, and if they'd sold enough tickets, then they were going to be able to run the screening sort of thing. So I think a lot of that kind of stuff is happening with this film. But if you do get an opportunity, yeah, do go and see it. It's the craziest shit you'll see this year.
It's very cool. Yeah, the couple of people that have seen it that I said, you know, you should see this, have had a really good reaction.
Yeah.
And there's been a lot of discussion about it afterwards, a lot of like, oh, shit, like, and what about this? And what about this? And have you thought about this? So, yeah, I think it's a really interesting documentary. Very, very cool. All right. Well, we're going to wrap up with just a little bit of TV. We're going to talk some Westworld. You know, I started watching that new Netflix show, Haters Back Off.
Okay.
About the Miranda Sings character.
Wants to be famous on
YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And has the help from her Uncle Jim. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Like any sort of comedy, you have that sort of honeymoon period where you're like, do I like these people? Do I not like these people? Is this character going to irritate me, or am I going to enjoy it? But I've watched, I think, 5 out of the 8 last night, and I started it pretty late, but then went pretty late because it was like, I just got to keep watching this now. So yeah, I quite enjoyed that.
Okay.
I watched Mascots as well, which was good, I don't think I got much out of it that, you know, I didn't enjoy from the trailer.
Okay.
Perhaps one or two sequences that were quite cool. Yeah. All right. Well, should we say then, if you don't want to be spoiled for Westworld, if you haven't caught up on it yet, we're going to talk about things that might be spoilers for the first 2 episodes. So we'll love you and leave you. If you haven't engaged with those yet, do recommend Westworld. I think it's the most interesting new series at the moment. But yeah, thanks for listening. Rate, review us on iTunes and go to our Facebook discussion page, all that stuff. fruitlesspursuits.com is our site. And yeah, we love your bums, balls,
all of it, every little furry bit of you,
every nook and cranny. Taint never had a friend like me. And Westworld spoilers begin
now.
It's the 2nd episode. Holding up?
Yeah. I think it's maybe not quite as... Well, I get the first one. There's a lot of mystery and a lot of unfolding of the world, and you maybe feel like you know how things work a little bit better now, but it's just expanding. So it wasn't that holy shit wow factor of the first one, but it's still really good.
I feel like they're going to have to bide their time to a degree. Like, I see no reason to rush this, especially with Game of Thrones sort of winding down.
Yeah.
I feel like there's going to be a lot of secrets and developments and mysteries and stuff that are going to unfold over time. We got to see the cleanup dudes.
Yes, yes.
We did speculate about that, like who gets to
get the jizz out of the hooker,
hose down these robots that everybody's banging. I'm very intrigued by this whole behind the scenes stuff. I always get thrilled when they show that, and I thought the robot coming to life and
them having to kind of corral her and get her back, and
was her really interesting
realizing what was going on. And
and James Marsden's just been treated like a bit of furniture, hasn't he? He's an optimistic little robot, but every time he tries to do something, he gets fucked on.
I bet that it'll probably be something in the future, because you know how they're kind of not infecting the robots, are kind of infecting each other as such. They say that little phrase and then they kind of get unlocked.
Yeah.
Sort of. Whether he gets unlocked and just turns into a complete rampaging fuckface. A complete opposite of what his character currently is.
I think it's interesting that nobody that I've heard very positive things about Westworld, and I completely agree with them. And Game of Thrones got so much shit about all the, like, sexual violence.
Mm.
And I haven't heard that directed at Westworld. I don't know if because it's fresh and we're just sort of, like, all getting to know the rules and everything. But there's a point where I see those women that are working in the behind the scenes. And I think, like, why are they so pro this rape fantasy theme park?
I guess that it's a bit, like, yeah, I don't know. I feel in this show, as opposed to Game of Thrones, like, they might imply things, but they just don't show you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that may be a line for some people. But, yeah, I guess it's definitely interesting, definitely something worth thinking about.
Yeah, because Anthony Hopkins feels like this sort of whimsical kind of dreamer character. That there's definitely something that sort of links him in my mind to David Attenborough in Jurassic Park.
Richard Attenborough. David Attenborough is the guy who like hangs up with like birds and
Yeah, I had them both in my head and I was choosing and I chose poorly, as the Grail Knight once said. I like, you know, was this sort of idealistic, sort of childlike wonder sort of person. So
do you reckon, you know, that kid in the second episode, is that him? Has he made a little version of him?
Possibly, yeah. Yeah, it's sort of like his philosophy kind of seems at odds to me with, like, this idea of, well, the man in black pays well, so let him
do what he wants.
Yeah, go and fuck everybody up. I don't know. I just keep looking and thinking of the bottom line. I just think, you know, these robots, so expensive to maintain. You know, we see them in their sort of white, liquidy, proto skinless form, and I think, but then every time somebody cuts a throat or does anything, all the right anatomy seems to be there. I don't know how that works with the white plastic people.
Oh, well, you see it all gets like dyed and stuff.
Yeah,
well, there's like, look, I think we probably shouldn't think into the process too much. Science robots, and they look like and seem like humans.
I'm not thinking about it to criticize it. I'm actually thinking about it because it fascinates me. I think it's just such an interesting aspect, because I love the different production areas and, you know, that behind the scenes stuff, and that really overzealous story guy who's got all these grand plans.
And just like in every office, the different departments are at odds with each other. Like the people who do the, like, physical stuff were bitching about the people who do the kind of behavioural cognition stuff, and I was like, oh, that's fun.
Yeah, and I definitely want to start cosplaying as those guys with the, you know, hazard suits and the gloves and the face shields who get to spray out flanges all day.
Jizz moppers?
Yeah, the robo-jizz cleansers. Because I've done a little bit of, like, pressure hose dishwashing in my time at McDonald's in my youth. Yeah. I reckon I could ease into the sort of position.
Yeah, okay.
Climb your way up to story.
I'm really enjoying it. I think it's a very interesting series, but I do know of some people that just aren't watching it because they do assume that it's going to have those problematic elements like Game of Thrones.
Yeah, you're right in the sense that it doesn't so much visually, like it's not sort of lingering.
Mm. It's so much, I guess in Game of Thrones, it's almost sometimes looking at those sorts of things as not a positive thing in a way, but kind of going, "Hoo-hoo, look at what we're doing." Whereas Westworld takes away from that.
But it is a murder and rape theme park that everybody seems to be quite happy to go along with. But that's interesting as well, because from what we've seen, and it's just two episodes, and they've got so much room in the future to, and I hope they don't do it too much, but then I shouldn't say that because it depends on how well it's done. You have that opportunity to kind of do that lost flashback kind of thing where you go, well, what were people doing before this? Because we have no sense of what the world is like outside of the park. We've seen the world of the park and the world behind the scenes at the park, but we don't know what state everybody is in before they go there and what values those people have. So there's so many questions.
Because the bit where Prince Caspian and
Lyle the intern,
Liam McPoyle, go on the train, like that was such a cool moment, and it almost felt really Hunger Games-y, you know, where they're coming into the capital and you can kind of see everything, and I was like, oh wow.
But that sort of makes you feel that maybe there's a, because if you look at like Lyle the intern's character who picks the white hat, you don't feel that they're necessarily coming from a really dystopian, morally degraded society. You feel like there's still optimism and sort of values, and that they have that sense of wonder, like that they're really intrigued by all this stuff. Funny as well, because like when I think of mediums, content that's sort of played with these kind of themes before, it isn't something that's really engaged me. What springs to mind now that we're talking about it is probably like Assassin's Creed. That idea of you've got that ye olde assassin renaissance-y kind of thing, and then it's got that futuristic simulation behind the scenes of that thing.
Which, well, that's actually what I thought Westworld was at first. I thought it was a simulation thing that people were taking part in.
You know, it makes me wonder how, like, it's probably too late for Assassin's Creed to sort of, you know, incorporate that kind of feel or approach. But I think, as you said, just that idea of really making that behind the scenes world seem real and relatable in the way that the different personalities are, and everybody's got their own priorities and their own area of expertise, and sees every other department as an obstacle, and are being led by this kind of strange visionary. There's a lot to, like, they've got a nice set of toys to play with moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we didn't really get the aftermath of that, because the first episode ends with they're killing the fly, which has huge ramifications for the future. It'd be really interesting to see what happens when everything sort of starts turning against them.
Because what was then her storyline in the second one? She found a gun? She dig up a gun? Was that her character?
Oh, God, I don't remember. You've got the prostitute character remembering this horrible past thing that had happened.
Yep.
And the idea that they're going to start remembering all the horrible things that have been done to them, which I guess is the, you know, payoff for everybody being able to run rampant and do all these terrible things. And we've got this man in black searching for the maze, the entrance to the maze, which is unclear to me if that's some sort of embedded end game or if that's him subverting what's there. That's a kind of weird thing as well. I mean, and again, this isn't a criticism, it's just fascinating. It's like something I'm looking forward to learning more about. Is it's quite odd that the robots are constantly exposed to things which are outside of the fantasy world anyway. Like, we saw that in the first episode, just the fact that these characters are shooting at someone and nothing's happening. And, you know, so for them, it's like all these weird, avenging, immortal devils coming out of everywhere. Or...
Yeah, and they're constantly, it seems like a lot of them are just always getting asked, well, are you real? And they'll be like, why the fuck am I not real? What's wrong with you?
Yeah. Oh, God, I did love that bit, though, with the old man that he helped coming up and trying to get him that quest.
Yeah.
Having played a lot of Warcraft, I'm like, yeah.
Stab that guy.
I can see this. You know, it gives you a better sense of how
fuck you, NPC.
And then, of course, the other thing that we didn't talk about when we were saying spoiler-free is just I'm always looking forward to the music. I want to see what songs are going to pop up on the old player piano.
Yeah.
So we had Radiohead's No Surprises in episode 2. So, yeah.
Very, very cool. Very interesting. I've actually resubscribed to HBO for this one. Because I think they've been putting the episodes up a little bit early. So I can probably go home and watch episode 3 now.
I thought, and this wasn't my theory, it was someone smarter than my theory, was that they put it up early last time because it was going to clash with the presidential debate.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
okay. And they knew that probably was better to get it happening early. So I don't know if that'll be a regular thing or not. But, it certainly made sure that more people had the opportunity to
see the jizz moppers.
To grab it by the pussy. Trump. What a class act. So, yeah. Westworld. Looking forward to the next one.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah, Westworld. I just got no energy now.
No.
I just felt... I could see the light at the end of the tunnel, and I just went, I'm done.
Burp.
Bye.
Burp. Bye.